Hello, everybody, and welcome to the On the Farm Pitcher List podcast about all things prospect, dynasty, and minor league related. Everybody, make sure you are subscribed to the Pitcher List Podcast Network, and if you do so choose, leave us a rating and review. You can follow, of course, the On the Farm podcast here at PL On the Farm on Twitter, as well as Rick at Must Be the Hawk and myself at Jake Mache. You can go ahead and send us any questions that you'd like us to look at in the future episodes. But for this episode today, we have a ton of content, a ton of awesome content, topical content for you all. We are focusing on the MLB draft and the NCAA national tournament that starts today. And so we're going to, today's for the mock draft, for the MLB draft. We're starting a mock draft series today. And so we're going to go through our podcast mock draft, our version of the MLB draft as we see it. We're going to do the first 10 picks today and then 10 more picks in the next 2 weeks. So today is, of course, 1 through 10, doing that first section of the draft, the lottery, if you will, and to see, you know, where we kind of see guys fitting in organizations based on like past trends that organizations have gone, you know, ways that they've gone in recent drafts for the first round and the fit that we see for the org. So we're going to go through that. And then for the NCAA tournament, we're going to do kind of a quick preview, just kind of giving some players to be aware of, some teams to be aware of, things to watch over the weekend. The first game for the tournament is today at noon Eastern. So it's getting going quick. It's going to be a fast and furious few days. So we're ready to roll. We're ready to roll. Rick, before we get into everything here, like how are you doing, man? Thank you, of course, for being back again, for coming back every week, for logging on the computer and hopping on the the recording session here. How's it going, man?
Man, you make it sound like I've been like kidnapped to go and do this podcast every week. No, it's fantastic, man. I'm doing really good, doing a ton of writing, a lot of research with the MLB draft that's going to be coming up soon. And you know, this was kind of an idea that you and I kind of bounced around a little bit to be able to try to better get to know some of these prospects before the draft. So that way, you know, our listeners as well, whenever you're watching the draft, you kind of know a little bit about these guys, right? Because just time and time again, I'll watch in the years past, I've watched the drafts, and sometimes you got to start learning from the ground up who these prospects are and, you know, how they fit in your organization. So this helps a lot to be able to get yourself on the ground floor once they're in the organizations and we see how they're performing. That's whenever our first year player draft ranks will, you know, really start to come into play. But you get a leg up because, you know, you see what they're doing in college, you see where they go in the draft, you could be able to navigate your first year player drafts a little bit better. And that's kind of the point of why we're trying to go down this road. So Jake, I'm excited, man. I think it's a good time, and it's a great time in college baseball, you know, with the tournaments and everything going on right now. We got some fantastic teams that are out there, and, you know, just a very exciting time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, especially with just the amount of college talent that's going to be available in the draft this year, as we'll talk about when we talk about the picks, there is a ton of college players that will be going in the top 10 picks, and really the first round in general. There is so much talent that will be showcased this weekend and the coming weekends, all the way up until the College World Series. And there will definitely be some draft stock that both rises and probably falls a little bit in the coming weeks as these players face the toughest competition, you know, the ultimate competition here. So it's going to tell us a ton about the draft as well, as we continue to watch here. So lots of, like you said, lots of exciting things happening in the baseball, the prospecting world coming up here for sure. So we are going to go ahead and get right into the NCAA tournament preview section of the podcast here. Like as I mentioned, ton of content to get through, so we're going to dive right in. And I wanted to first talk about the most interesting regional groups. So for anyone who needs a reminder, the tournament field is 64 teams, and it starts with 16 regionals, 16 groups of four teams, and each regional, it's located at the number one seed for that regional, with top 16 national seed, located at their home park, and it is a double elimination bracket. Four teams, pretty quick and easy, and then one team makes it out of each one of the regionals. The 16 teams that are remaining then play eight best of three series, and the eight teams that come out of that go to the College World Series, where it goes back to the double elimination bracket format, and then ends with a best of three series with the two teams that are remaining after all of that chaos. So one of the reasons I really love this tournament specifically, out of really all of the college national tournaments, is that there are multiple formats of brackets. You have the double elimination, you have the best of three series. Just there's so much that goes into like managing a pitching staff. When are you going to throw your ace starter? You know, if you're the one seed, are you going to throw them against the four? Are you going to wait to throw them against the two or the three? You know, are you going to throw them right away? Or do they finish out the series on, you know, Sunday afternoon? Like, there's so much that goes into it. And just it's just a ton of fun. So first off was just tough. I wanted to look at like the most interesting regionals. So regionals that I think are stacked, that have really competitive twos, threes, four seeds within these regionals. And the first one that I wanted to bring up here is the Tucson Regional, which is hosted by Arizona. And the one seed is Arizona, two is Dallas Baptist, three is West Virginia, and four is Grand Canyon. And that is pretty steep competition throughout. Dallas Baptist is consistently a top tier program outside of the Power Five conferences. They're in the tournament, seems like every single year. They have, I think, 46 wins this year, just dominated their conference. So they're back at a top seed again this year. Really no surprise there. West Virginia is interesting because they have one of the best draft prospects in J.J. Weatherholt, and he missed a decent amount of time with injury and then came back. And since he returned, they finished off the regular season going 17-8. Without him, they went 14-10, so they definitely proved down the stretch with him. And I mean, you're talking about that level of player. That's always something interesting that's going to be happening. West Virginia is a solid team, playing a good conference. And then Grand Canyon is, I think, maybe the one of the best four seeds in the tournament. So they have a really balanced offense. I think there's a team that hit 311, and they have guys that can get on base, keep the line moving. It's a deep lineup. And then the pitching staff, which is interesting, is about like average pitching staff. But I thought was interesting was there is not a pitcher that has only started games. And there are a ton of pitchers who have started at least one game. So they have guys that are just pitching, right? There are no like clearly defined roles. They don't have, you know, like that Friday starter. They don't have the front line. They don't have the elite lockdown closer. They just have guys that go out there and pitch, and they can work with the matchups. Like, guys don't like get offended if they, you know, aren't like starting a game. They can just throw, they can throw the fifth through the eighth inning, and it's like, if that guy's on today, that guy's on. So I think that's dangerous from this tournament perspective when we're talking about, you know, having a deep pitching staff, guys who can do this. This is a team that they've done this the whole season. And I think that that is specifically, you know, I think in unique, it sets them up well for this tournament. So I think that's four competitive teams. And if Grand Canyon beat Arizona, I wouldn't be super surprised. They played each other earlier in the year. Arizona won. I like it. And Dallas Baptist in West Virginia, that's a toss up, I think. So really loving what I'm seeing out of that regional. Rick, any thoughts? You seem excited. It seems like I've won you over a little bit.
You did, man. And that's the thing with Grand Canyon University. I mean, great talent that comes out of there almost year in and year out. You know, Jacob Wilson last year. And same with Dylan Head too, coming out of Grand Canyon University. So, you know, some really, really great prospects that, you know, have come out of there before, like you said, with J.J. Weatherholt, with Virginia, giving them, you know, West Virginia a whole different life. You know, that's very exciting. I'm curious to see when Ryan Johnson pitches for Dallas Baptist. I think that will be a lot of fun to watch. And man, like all the Arizona schools, just
they
are always like getting things done out there. I love it. That's a really awesome conference.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Next one that I wanted to talk about is the Stillwater Regional. So the number one seed, the host, is Oklahoma State. Number two in the region is Nebraska. Three is Florida. Four is Niagara. I think this is a battle of the top three. No, you know, shade to Niagara. Just, you know, I don't see them kind of competing, being able to take a game. But one, two, and three, Oregon State, Nebraska, and Florida. Holy cow. I mean, these are really great teams. I love Oklahoma State, and I think they ultimately get out of it, but I think they're going to be really close games. So you have Nebraska, who is atop the Big Ten. Big Ten is not an incredible baseball conference, but Nebraska still, I mean, they took care of business. They dominated the Big Ten. They won the Big Ten tournament. After losing the first game by like 10 runs, they came back and knocked off five wins in a row. So they're on fire. And then Florida, very interesting because they started the season ranked in the top 10. It might even have been top five. It was like maybe six. And they've been in the SEC. They didn't perform super well in the SEC, which was, of course, stacked again this year. They were one of the last teams to get in, but they played in the SEC all season. They've played the best teams in the country the entire year. Their non-conference schedule is also tough. So this is a team that has faced just better competition than Nebraska has specifically. So I think it will definitely be tough. They might even be a favorite against Nebraska. So it's like you got these three teams from three different conferences that have all been successful. Florida's also been one of the best programs in the country over the last like decade, two decades. So these are definitely winning programs that I think it'll be really fun to see those three battle out. Again, I love Oklahoma State. I just think that they're the best well-rounded team, but I think that Nebraska and Florida can definitely make some noise there.
Yeah, well, I absolutely agree. I think it'll be interesting to be able to see what Jack Caglione does. For Florida in that series.
When do they pitch him? Yeah.
I know, because that's the thing. He's the two-way player, so you'll see him pitch and you'll see him hit.
Yeah, exactly. So that'll be awesome. All right, so the last one I want to talk about here is the Clemson Regional. Again, like Clemson is the host, of course. Very, very good team. They've really been at the top of the national rankings for a while now. But they face Vanderbilt as the two seed, and then Coastal Carolina is the three seed, and High Point is the four seed. You know, it's another case of like having these really competitive teams at the top. Clemson is been the best team in the ACC pretty consistently recently. Vanderbilt in the SEC, again, another team who had big expectations coming into the year, played in a tough conference, didn't like perform as high at a level that they have in recent years, but they're still a very, very good, very competitive team. And then Coastal Carolina, another one of those very consistent mid-majors who are always in the tournament, it seems like, who I think they made it to the College World Series, or what did they win? They were like the Cinderella team a few years back. But yeah, so that, again, these really great programs. I was actually surprised to see recently that Clemson has the most ACC tournament wins of all time. I honestly did not know that Clemson was that great historically of a like a franchise there. So three really great teams. They're all very well balanced. And I just love the competitive. I think Coastal Carolina, like even in a year where they didn't perform as well as they usually do in their conference, they were one of the better teams, but not like at that elite level that we've seen. I still think they can compete. And then Vanderbilt, it'll be an interesting case because is Clemson just going to like trounce them because they've been the better team, or is the experience that that Vandy and Coastal have going to kind of come and make it difficult for Clemson for sure? I think that'll be a fun one too.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. And, you know, don't sleep on High Point either.
Good point. That is a good point. High Point is good as well. They're ranked pretty highly in like RPI and like the national rankings. They're going to be a good one as well, for sure.
Yeah, that's another one that's like right down the road from me. So,
oh, really? The Carolinas are ridiculous for baseball right now.
I know. Every time I talk to you, Jake, like, I'm sorry, what? There's this near you?
Yeah.
You're going to go see this? Yeah.
Yep. So wish I was in the Carolinas, but it is what it is. So those are what I think are the most interesting regional groups with good talent top to bottom. That should be really great to watch this weekend. Then I wanted to highlight a few players to watch. So these are not necessarily like the top end guys that we're going to discuss in our, you know, top 10 mock draft coming up here in a minute. These are guys that are like, you know, borderline first round, maybe competitive balance, maybe early second round, as well as a pitcher that kind of came out of nowhere this year. So the first, we'll start with that pitcher. So this is Brett Sears, righty for Nebraska. He was a Big Ten pitcher of the year. And I'm curious, you know, did he just dominate the kind of mediocre competition in the Big Ten? You know, because he's going to get to face, you know, either the top Big 12 team in Oklahoma State or a perennial SEC powerhouse in Florida. So he is draft eligible this year. He is not like super high on any, you know, mock drafts, any rankings, but he had a great statistical season. His ERA was like right at 2 for the year, was about 9, just over 9 K per 9. So not like a huge whiff guy, but didn't give up any runs really. So really interesting to see how that plays out at the national level on the biggest stage. And of course, Nebraska, they're always playing for home field advantage to get to Omaha. So that's always, they were just in the Big Ten tournament, which of course is always in Omaha as well. And the crowd there was ridiculous. So Nebraska is always a fun one to watch in these national tournaments, because you just like, I really want to see it happen one year, you know, to like go to the CWS and have that advantage there. But anyway, really interesting to see, I think, who he will face. He finished off the Big Ten tournament, their victory on Sunday. He closed the game for them in the ninth inning, came on and finished it off there. So maybe he pitches the first game and is available in the ninth, you know, on Sunday. So that'll be a fun one for sure. Rick, did you have anything else on Sears?
No, I mean, you got it really, really well there. You know, once again, let's refer back to what we were talking about last week, you know, in terms of most pitchers' ERAs, the highest ERA that we've seen in college baseball right now. And just like you're saying about Sears here, you know, there's going to be a lot of value, you know, going into this draft. And if he is with a certain organization that ends up developing, you know, his skill set a little bit more, getting a little bit more out of the strikeout potential, you know, that's impressive. And I agree with what you're saying. I think he will probably be somewhere in the second to third round comp rounds, somewhere in that range. But make sure you keep him on your radar, because he's very interesting.
Yeah, no, he's a fun one for sure. The other two players I wanted to highlight are both outfielders. So first is Dakota Jordan. He's outfielder for Mississippi State. Had a huge year on the stat line, big offensive production. He slashed 339, 452, 643 with 17 homers in 270 plate appearances. But with a big asterisk, he struck out 28.5% of the time. So he's kind of looking like he could potentially go in the first round of the draft. He's probably going to be like right on the edge of the first round, maybe competitive balance. And I think a pretty good sense of that is going to be what scouts see in these games, you know, against better competition. How does he look? You know, how does he look in his IBs? Is he, you know, in the, you know, in the environment, in the high pressure situations, how does he look? That K rate is like a pretty big knock against him. So if you can put together competitive ABs, I think that'll definitely help. But also, I guess I shouldn't say better competition, because like he plays in the SEC, which is probably the best competition consistently. Yeah. So, you know, I think that it's just a case of, you know, maybe he can kind of edge himself just barely into that at the end of the first round, if he can put together a really strong appearance. Because also Mississippi State has a decent chance to move on. They're playing Virginia in their regional, and Virginia is good, but their pitching leaves a bit to be desired. So if Jordan himself can hit maybe a couple bombs and take advantage of that, I think that he could really kind of put his name a bit out there as well going into the draft.
No, I agree. Big power potential there with Jordan. So I'm curious. I'm curious to see how he does against Virginia. I'm curious to see where he'll end up. Just like you said, you know, back end first, you know, second round is around where I kind of have him pegged a little bit, but we'll see, because there's some big upside here if a good team can be able to tap into it.
Right. Absolutely. And then last player I wanted to mention here that we should keep an eye on is Kalen Culpepper, outfielder for Kansas State. Just like an incredible athlete, a really balanced profile, doesn't have like a glaring weakness. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he has still put together, I think it was 10 homers in his junior year, last year. I don't know if that's his junior year, but he had 10 homers last year, 9 homers this year, in 40 games last year, 50 games this year. And, you know, so like decent amount of pop, but for what we've seen at the college level, it's not like doesn't stand out a ton. And then he steals a bunch of bases as well. Double digit steals here. So, I mean, he's great defensively. And for Kansas State, like he's their guy. Like they definitely go as far as he takes them. The offense really is kind of revolving around him and his impact there. So like, if Kansas State, who is a team that kind of just barely squeaked in, they were definitely a bubble team going in. If they can make some noise in the tournament, if they take a game or two, maybe make it to the Sunday games, I think he's going to be a big reason for that. And we'll definitely see some highlights of his in the regional play. So I think that if he can just elevate his team and just kind of be that guy, because he was a big name last year in the national tournament, making a lot of noise there. So Rick, like you mentioned earlier in the podcast or before the podcast, he started off super slow.
Yeah.
And it's just gotten better as the year went on. So if he could just kind of capitalize on that momentum and kind of remind people what kind of impact he can have on the game, I think that that could be a really interesting one as well. Again, thinking like maybe competitive balance, maybe early second, but you never know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super, super athletic, super athletic.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the players that I wanted to mention. Some of the guys that are kind of on the outside looking in that could kind of see their, you know, stock rise if they really kind of show out in these regionals. And now I want to have this is the fun part, you know, the upsets. Who is going to get out of their regionals? Who can maybe even make the College World Series that is not expected to be there? Have some interesting nuggets here. So first I'm going to do the most likely upset out of the regionals. And so these are just teams that I think are maybe better than their seed, maybe have a bit softer competition in their regional, and maybe have like a path, you know, to victory, but might not make it much further beyond that, you know, either faces a really tough team in the second round or just kind of has that kind of best matchup in the beginning. So first one I want to mention, already talked about them a little bit, is West Virginia. So they are the 3 seed, as I mentioned earlier, in that Tucson regional. So I think if there's some chaos, if Grand Canyon wins, if West Virginia could beat Dallas Baptist, I mean, that's immediately puts them on the high end there. And I mean, like I said earlier with Weatherholt, if you have that guy that kind of that can carry you through, I think that can make a difference. The issue is that they would likely face UNC, maybe LSU in the round of 16. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they would have the momentum to quite get them past those two teams. But in a very tough regional with high upset potential, I like them to get out of that regional. And so, like I mentioned earlier, which is Weatherholt is huge. And in the chaos, I think that they can kind of be the team that sneaks through there. The other one that I liked is Mississippi State. Again, just mentioned them. I like that their pitching is really great and they have a good core in the lineup. They don't have a very deep lineup, but they have those impact guys in like the 2-3-4 hole that can make a ton of damage, you know, when their turn comes around. So they can keep games close and then strike, you know, when their best players are up. I think that that's good for them. I mean, plus, doesn't hurt to be in the SEC. A lot of SEC bias on this podcast. I apologize, but the proof is in the pudding, if you will. And let's see here. Where was Mississippi State going back to the bracket here? Play Virginia. Who else was in that regional? St. John and Penn. I think they beat St. John pretty easily. Can they score enough runs against Virginia's pitching? And just if their, you know, pitching can just keep that Virginia offense at bay. I tend to like the pitching better than the, you know, when two, when like a pitching team and an offense team is like facing, I tend to go with the pitching team. Cause I think that just kind of wins out more often. You know, you can get streaky on offense and it's tough, you know, when the lineup isn't going, it can stall pretty quickly. So I like Mississippi State to beat Virginia, just a more well-rounded team. I think Virginia is more of the one trick pony, if you will, there in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And let's see here. An honorable mention is Oregon. So they are in the Santa Barbara region, face UC Santa Barbara and San Diego. And they're the one in the two seeds. Oregon is three. Fresno State is the four. I like Oregon just because they're pitching. They have a really good pitching staff. They keep them in games. Their bullpen specifically is lights out. So I just think that they have a good chance to advance just based on the depth that they have in pitching, on the pitching staff. And then if they win, they would likely face Texas A&M. So probably not going to go further, but I think that's a good opportunity, you know, to get out of the region there. And then let's see here. Also, teams that can make the College World Series. So I was specifically looking at threes and fours here. Is there anyone that is ranked below the top two seeds in their regional that could maybe make some noise? So the obvious picks are, I think, Florida and Texas, two Power Five teams facing really good competition. Texas was really good in the Big 12. They were one of the top teams. They didn't perform super well in the conference championship. I think that if they could beat Texas A&M, I think they would be the favorite against whoever comes out of the Santa Barbara region, and then they'd be in the College World Series. So I like Texas, and then Florida, again, the SEC team that was kind of playing middle of the road in conference, but just has faced the competition, and they're in the Nebraska, Oklahoma State, Niagara group. And then if they win, they would face whoever comes out of the Clemson regional, which is another chaotic one. So I think that the chaos usually happens in clumps, you know, in bunches. Yeah. And so if you get a couple weird seeds coming out of those two regions, I think Florida has a good chance just on their experience. They're battle tested. And I think that they can kind of make it to the CWS there. And then the most fun pick that I had prepped for this episode is this pick here, the four seed that I think has a decent chance to make the College World Series. So this four seed is Stetson University, where Rick had pointed out Jacob DeGrom attended. So
that's right.
There's your calling card, your claim to fame for Stetson. But they, what caught my mind, my eye on Stetson, is they played a extremely tough non-conference schedule, which is pretty common for like the mid-majors. They usually go and play a bunch of Power Five teams, but Stetson performed. They played these teams hard, and these were not only like Power Five teams, they were like tournament teams. And so I went and looked, and against not only non-conference opponents, but against non-conference opponents who are in the national tournament right now, they went 5-6 against them. That is, I think that's a crazy for a four seed, for a non-power five. Who the heck is Stetson? You know, for them to play these teams tough. The kicker, Rick, is that they played Florida State twice already. Who is the number one seed in the region that they are playing in the first game? And they won one of the two games. The game that they lost against Florida State, they lost 1-0. And then they beat them. They beat them pretty handedly. Let me find it again to make sure I get the correct score here. They beat them 10-5 and then lost 0-1.
Wow.
I mean, so. I mean,
if you want a Cinderella team,
I think, I mean, that's it.
It doesn't get more than this. And here's the thing, like, even if they do, you know, knock off FSU, which would be huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even get out of that bracket, they could still do more damage.
Yeah, they would play the winner of the Norman Regional, which is Oklahoma, Duke, UConn, and Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts and UConn, I don't see either one of them getting out of it. Oklahoma just lost the conference. They were the number one seed in the Big Ten, just lost the conference championship to Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. I think they have some holes. Duke is like a fun team, and they just made some noise in the ACC tournament.
They won the ACC tournament.
I was going to say they just won. So these are two teams that went deep in the tournament. I think they're tough, but I think that they're beatable. You know, I don't love them as top seeds. So if Stetson gets out, if they beat Florida State, like they've already done, and they can get out of the region and they face Oklahoma or Duke, I think they could be in worse situations. You know, like I don't think they'd be the favorite by any means in a 3-game series against Oklahoma or Duke, but they're not going to have to face like Tennessee or Arkansas or, you know, Arizona or USC, you know, like they're not going to face, I don't think, some of the best teams. Like Oklahoma is the 8th ranked team nationally. So I don't know. I like it.
I'm saying this right now. If they beat Florida State, I'm getting a Stetson hat. Yeah. Same day I'm ordering. Yeah, and I'm going to wear it for the pod. I'll post the picture on Twitter, whatever you guys want. If they knock off FSU, let's go.
Yes,
DeGoat University.
DeGoat University. I love it. I love it. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love it so much. So yeah, Stetson, I think they're awesome. Overall, they went 40-20. They're 20-10 in the conference. First series of the year, they played West Virginia, split the series, 4-game set. Then they went and beat number 4 University of Florida in Florida. You know, like, they hung tough with so many teams. They split against UCF, another tournament team, split against Florida State. Like, they did not shy away from competition, and then they played them tough. So I think a team that's already kind of had that level of expertise this year, of experience, I mean, yeah. So I think they're going to be fun, and could be a Cinderella. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Alrighty. So last but not least, who are the national championship contenders? Mm-hmm. I love Oklahoma State. Cannot get enough of Oklahoma State. Now, I will admit, it is absolutely a bandwagon. Couldn't have told you that Oklahoma State was a top team in the country 3 weeks ago. I will admit that. But I've watched a handful of their games almost by coincidence recently, and they've played tough. Really killed their biggest rival in Oklahoma. In Oklahoma's last game in the Big 12, they beat them pretty handedly in the conference championship. They are a very well-rounded team. I don't see like a significant weakness here. Their pitching staff is fantastic. They have two frontline starters that are awesome. They get a ton of strikeouts as a pitching staff. Their offense, they're like a, I don't want to say a three true outcomes offense, but they have a ton of homers and they get on base. Don't have a fantastic batting average, but I think their team on base percentage is like 400, or just over 400. Actually, I have it pulled up here. Where'd it go? Oh, I'm on their pitching stats. Way to kill the momentum. 401. Look at that. 401 as a team on base percentage. They also hit a ton of homers. They have four different guys that have at least 12 homers. I think that they have a deep lineup, and I think they're just a really well-rounded team, very fun team. So I think that they can get out of their side of the bracket, which I think is the easier half of the bracket because let's see here. Let me see some of the teams that are in this part of the bracket. It's like Oregon State, Kentucky, NC State, Georgia, Clemson, UCSB, Texas A&M. I think that is definitely easier than the other side, which is North Carolina, Arizona, Virginia, Arkansas, Florida State, Oklahoma, East Carolina, and Tennessee. Not having to play Tennessee on its own, I think, is definitely the better option. So I see Oklahoma State's side of the bracket as being more of like the chaos side. I expect to see more upsets over there. So I think that it's easier for a team like Oklahoma State, who hasn't been like one of the top contenders the whole year, to come out of that one. But then on the other side, I think it's probably going to be like Tennessee or Arkansas. Tennessee is just insane on both sides of the ball. Their pitching staff is lights out. Their offense is deep, and they're just so good. I don't know that there's a weakness there. Arkansas, they have the best pitching staff, but I don't know if their offense is going to be able to keep up. Like, the pitching staff will keep them in it, And it's what got them a 20-10 SEC record, which is insane this year. So like I could see it, but I if that offense can't keep up. So I think it's going to be my prediction would be Tennessee, Oklahoma State, and I'll take Oklahoma State to pull off an upset. The battle of the orange teams, if you will. And yeah, I think Oklahoma State's going to be a good one there. But I just Tennessee is going to be tough. Tennessee is a big one.
Yeah, they're that's really going to be a really tough matchup. Really I think they're great picks, honestly. I'm with it 100%.
I love it. Rick, you've been very supportive of my takes today, and I really appreciate that. Feel very encouraged and valued today.
Well, they're really well thought out. I would tell you if they're not, but you're doing a great job.
Have you ever watched baseball before? No. Oh, man. So yeah, I really get into it. Here's the secret here. I love brackets and that's about it. I can get into any bracket. I get into the like the massive like tennis tournaments, like it's like the Australian Open that's happening right now, or one of the Grand Slams is happening right now. I'll watch it. I don't pay attention to tennis outside of it, but like I'll turn it on in the next few days once it gets down. Like I love brackets, and so baseball and brackets, sign me up. Absolutely.
We should put a note in for this for next year and do a on the farm bracket. We'll figure out what it is.
Yep.
You know, maybe hey, you know what? We could do a bracket like on the farm, like what is it? For the MLB draft. You could always do something like that. Closest one to the first 10 picks, right?
I love the sound of that. Yes. Man, more like brackets into the content, Rick. More brackets. I should have brought this up earlier. I don't know how it hasn't come up.
I'll post more on Twitter for us.
There you go. There you go. All right. So that is a very quick and dirty kind of preview of some things that you could kind of keep up to date with that are happening this weekend, today, this very day. There's going to be competitive national tournament baseball happening. So go check that out at your local television and see what's happening there. But we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, Rick is going to take over and really dive into the first 10 picks, the first round of the MLB draft, and how we see that shaking out. So stick with us after the break. All right, and we are back. And we've reached the meat and potatoes of the episode, the kickoff episode for the mock draft series that we are going to be running for in anticipation of the MLB draft that is coming up. That will happen during the All-Star break in mid-July. And so we're going to look at picks, like I said, 1 through 10 today, starting with the Guardians at number 1 and going all the way through the 10th pick, which is held by the Nationals. So I'm seeing a lot of college players here, and we'll definitely go into that. We'll talk about the high school player that is in the mix to break up this group of college talent, as well as how we see that that the first few picks goes. Rick and I were talking about this earlier. It's pretty wide open, and it's pretty well understood that there isn't a consensus, number one, but that there's a few different ways the Guardians can go. And after that, I think it'll be chaos for the next, like, five before we start to see it maybe get a little bit more predictable. But this first group of college talent, I mean, it's going to be really fun to see these names go off the board and in some order, you know, when the day comes.
Yeah, that's kind of the main thing, because you know, going through and doing this, I knew that I wanted to do this for several weeks now, and I've just been really racking my brain around who will go number one. You know, what values are going to be falling, and where will these teams value high school talent early on? Last year, we saw four of the first 10 picks with high school talent, and we've got some great high school prospects that are in this draft class, but I think it kind of speaks to how college heavy it is this year and the performances that we're seeing that. You know, I had a very hard time trying to figure out if one fit into the first 10 picks. So, yeah, I'll be curious to see what you guys think. Make sure that you shoot us over a message on Twitter. So that way, you know, we can kind of get an idea of what you guys think. This is something that I think fits for these teams. I'll talk about it whenever we go through each one of them. But it was a lot of fun to be able to lay this out. So, yeah, I guess we'll get into it from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's dive right in. First overall, the Guardians will be on the clock with that first pick. Rick, who are the names that you were kind of tossing around for this that you think is, you know, have the potential to be called here? And then ultimately, who do you think they're going to go with?
Yeah, so I think there's three names that you could really go with the Guardians here with 1-1 overall. I've seen Chase Burns be dropped around on some of the Guardians Twitter feeds and stuff like that. Some of the ones that follow them really closely. I've seen Travis Benzana be, you know, put in as the, you know, number one overall prospect taken here. And that would be a very fitting Guardians-esque prospect to take there, right? I didn't go that way. I didn't want to fight it too much. I really believe that Charlie Condon is going to go 1-1 to the Guardians. He has played first, third, and outfield while in Georgia, and here is my rationale for it. In addition to breaking the home run record this year with 35, Condon slashed 443, 558, and had a 1.043 slug, which is absolutely amazing, with 75 RBIs. What really pushes me here is that Condon played 24 games in the outfield this season for Georgia, setting him up to be able to fill a need that I think that they need more power in the outfield with a prospect like, you know, Chase DeLauder that they ended up getting, you know, just recently bringing up Jonathan Rodriguez. They still need some help in the outfield, I think, long term with power. And I think Condon fits very well for that. He did play 30 games this year at third base as well for Georgia. So he has that ability to be, you know, either, you know, a third base, first base prospect, but you could put him in the outfield and he'll be able to perform. And the power is absolutely massive. I think that this is a fundamentally solid hitter, something that the Guardians, you know, pride themselves on having. Yeah, so I think Charlie Condon is a great pick here, 1-1.
Yeah, I love the still kind of fitting the mold of like a Guardians prospect with like the good hit tool, you know, really great plate approach. I mean, he had an on-base percentage of 558, but also having that power to add that you don't see from a lot of Guardians players, Guardians prospects. They usually, I think, you know, really focus more on the hit tool aspect, but I mean, this is a well-rounded college bat that can impact their team much quicker than, you know, any, of course, you know, high school talent. And also, I think he might be the fastest rising of any of the college bats, you know, because just how well developed that hit tool is. And I think that it's going to be really interesting if the Guardians do take him, because it's it'll be interesting to see how they develop that power and how they continue working with his hitting hit tool there, his hitting ability. Really like that for the Guardians. I think that's a fun pick to think of in that organization.
Yeah, and if you think about it too, if you wanted to go the Benzana, you know, route there, you could, but I mean, the second base prospect, and he exclusively played second base. So, you know, you don't necessarily want to move around your infield too much because they've got a very solid defensive infield to this point. And Chase Burns is very, very solid and could be very good there at 1-1. I'm not going to rule that one out, but I think, honestly, going with the outfield need over the pitching, I think would be the better way to go for the Guardians long term.
Yeah, absolutely agree. Alrighty, on to the second overall pick with the Cincinnati Reds. Rick, where do you think that they're going to go? What direction they're going to go for that second pick?
Yeah, so this one was actually really tricky as well because automatically you want to go Bazana at number two to the Reds. But whenever you look at the Reds organization as a whole, you know, already they have India and they have McClain at second base, right? You have Ellie De La Cruz at short. Noel V. Marte is obviously with the PED right now, but primarily, you know, third base, you know, long term, right? There's not really necessarily a need for it. Yes, you draft the talent and you figure it out later. But like I said, Mazzotta didn't play in any other position, so he would be learning it all new. I think he played a couple, had seven games in the Cape Cod League, but it didn't go well with his averages or anything like that. So I wouldn't put much stock into that.
What seven I decided, games in the outfield?
Yeah, seven games in the outfield. Yeah, yeah. And like the numbers were just not there, which is odd because he's good every other stop he's ever done.
Yeah.
So you know what? I decided to zig a little bit here. The Reds could end up trying to go under slot and maybe go high school with this. They could end up going Connor Griffin. But once again, you're talking about a shortstop, outfield prospect. Outfield, I could see it, but shortstop, not as much. I think personally, they're going to go Chase Burns. I think they're going to go back-to-back Wake Forest pitchers, you know, and go Chase Burns. It would be a ton of fun, right? Mm-hmm. Right. So, exactly. So, you know, fun fact about Chase Burns, he was born in Napoli, Italy.
I had no idea.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
obviously, he's been extremely, you know, fantastic this year. 15 starts with the Demon Deacons. He struck out 184 batters over 95 innings pitched. That's good for a 17.4 K per nine, Jake, if you were calculating it.
Yeah, okay.
Pretty impressive. 2.5 walks per nine. Once again, pretty impressive if you're going outside the zone, right?
Yeah.
And finished the year with a 2.46 ERA in the ACC, which we've talked about multiple times over. Second, I'd say second only to the SEC in terms of competition. So
for sure.
You know, that's pretty good right there. I think realistically speaking, Burns is going to move relatively quickly through their system, which would be beneficial for the Reds, you know, as early as the 2025 season. You know, right now they have Montas and they have Ashcraft in the back end of that rotation right now. But I just want you to take a moment, Jake, close your eyes and imagine a rotation in Cincinnati, the great American launching pad of dominance. They're going to have that at the end. I'm just penning that in right now. Green, Burns, Lauder, Lodolo, Abbott is your number five. Think about it.
That sounds wonderful.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I thought so too. So yeah, so Chase Burns is what I'm going to go with here. I don't feel super confident, but I think it could make sense, and that's where I'm going with in this at this time.
Love it. Love the take there. And yeah, just they've put a huge emphasis on pitching prospects, you know, and bolstering that rotation. Even though they've had good young starters the last couple of years now, Hunter Green was kind of really the first big guy to come through on the pitching staff and has really changed the kind of trajectory of their pitching staff. Since then, they've added just a bunch of dudes and they just keep going. They're really focusing on developing pitching, and they have a ton of hitting prospects, ton of youth on the hitting side that's already there. So having that that ace that's going to come up, and we have a pretty quick impact. I don't think he's going to be quite the Skeens level of hype and kind of immediate impact, but I could definitely see him in 2025 making it to Cincinnati and entering that young dynamic rotation. And I mean, the swings and misses that you're going to see in that with that rotation you said there. I mean, that's just disgusting.
Yeah, yeah, I thought so too. Like I said, the only other thing I would have thought that they would need, it would be some outfield help. But at number two overall, it's hard because you would like to, you know, make a jump with like a Braden Montgomery or something along that line. The outfield that's in this draft is very solid, but is it number two?
Right. There's not a lot that, like, if it's not Condon, there isn't like that immediate next outfielder that kind of fits in the mix, you know, like right. It'd definitely be a stretch. And I mean, they could go under slot maybe, but like, I don't really, you know,
yeah,
I don't really see it.
I mean, if Cleveland goes a different direction and Condon falls to number two, I guarantee you the Reds are going to be absolutely thrilled. And that will be insane to watch
in Great American Ballpark. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, on to number three. So we have the Rockies, who always an interesting, interesting to see who they draft, because if it is a pitcher, you see that you hear the collective, oh God, you know, like that, mm-hmm. that poor guy, like sent off to the gulag, just destined to give up homers and struggle acclimating to the altitude, away to home, to what do their breaking balls do? The shapes are different. Oh, it's just horrible. Those poor guys. But they've been pretty good. They've been had a focus on developing pitching. They just took Dollinger last year. Their hitting prospects are looking solid in kind of the upper levels of the minors. You've had like Amador and Fernandez maybe take a step back, but they've been able to develop hitters. But they've been focusing on the pitching lately. How do they maintain competitive there? Rick, do you think they're going to stick with the pitching and kind of continue to build that out? Or are they going to lean into the hitters that they've been able to develop?
You know, I do. I think that they're going to stick with pitching. They want to go and they want to get top tier, you know, starting pitching, something different than what they've been going with. They've been going a lot more with the safe, keep the ball on the ground type, you know.
Yeah,
John Gray was solid for what he was there, but you know, we were all screaming free John Gray. He goes to Texas and he found a whole new level. I think that Colorado's on the right track though with developing these pitching prospects, and you know, I felt going into this that there was very little doubt in my mind that they were going to go pitcher, and I'm going to go with Hagen Smith here. I think, you know, if you have Dolander, you have Sean Sullivan right now, who is absolutely tearing it up with Dolander. You also have Carson Palmquist that has been very, very, very solid. So now you're basically creating a four-man rotation right there of just the guys I've listed off here. And we've got some other ones in this system too, but that's for another day. But like I said, I think that they're going to end up going with a college arm here, you know, in a draft class in which last year we saw Skeens and Waltrip go. Now we're seeing Burns and Smith. And just like we talked about last week, like Burns and Smith are, you know, just as good, if not better than what we were seeing with Skeens and Waltrip last year, which is hard to believe, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Just keeps getting better. But anyway, with Hagen Smith here, you know, I really like what we're seeing here. It appears they're trying to go after top tier talent. Like I said, in Arkansas, he had 15 starts with the Razorbacks. He struck out 154 batters over 79 innings pitched. That is good for an absurd 17.5 K per nine with a 3.4 walks per nine. Very solid for the high strikeout ability that he is there. A stellar 1.48 ERA in the SEC cannot be understated enough. Yep. That is massive. This could easily be an ace to add to a quickly impressing future rotation in Colorado. We saw what Skeens is doing now with the Pirates. It's really kind of give a whole new boost of life to an organization. I think that Hagen Smith could be that boost for Colorado that they really need. And add to a very interesting rotation quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it'll be really fascinating if in 2 years from now, there are two like fantasy relevant Rocky starters. Mm-hmm. Like when was the last time that a Rocky starter, like in redraft, let's say, went in like the top 250, you know, in like ADP, or when, you know, was there a highly coveted dynasty pitcher that was in Colorado? Like that hasn't happened. Germán Márquez
was like, the only one I was thinking.
Right. Like he was dependable, a workhorse, you know, a ton of innings. Ubaldo Jiménez had that first half, yeah, like 10 years ago. That was incredible. But like that was it. Like who else? You know, John Gray, like you said, like he was there and he had his moments, but like end of the day, he was really handicapped by that environment. And then he left and did really well. So it's like, I think that they're going to be values before mm-hmm. they like establish themselves, because I think a lot of people are just going to write off. Like, I don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with streaming them. I don't want to deal with just pitching them on the road in good matchups. I want a pitcher that I can just throw into my lineups and be confident about it. But I think that they could be you know, I think that they could work. I think if, you know, I think they're still going to get their strikeouts, and I think that they can be relevant, you know, in fantasy again. They're a couple, like one or two Rockies pitchers.
Right. Right. Exactly.
And if, here's if of the course thing. They take Hagen Smith, I think it could be really fascinating.
Exactly. And hard throwing pitchers, we're going to see home runs, right? And it's a home run heavy environment. I get that. But something that the Rockies have not focused on as much is going after the strikeout.
Right.
You know, they want to put the ball on the ground, or they want to do the whole, you know, fly ball type of situation.
Right. But what if they don't hit the ball at all?
Right. But if they don't hit the ball at all, it's
then
fine.
Who cares about the altitude? Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I feel like we need to create like a graphic right here with like sound and everything that just says, just try stuff. Because you need to. You just need to try things, right? Your mind is blown right now. I know. You just have to try things. And honestly, if you're just going to go after the strikeouts, let's go. I will take the home runs. You know? DeGrom gives up home runs. Nobody talks about the home runs DeGrom gives up.
Mm-hmm. Because Garrett he goes Cole out there has like one of the highest, not one of the highest. I mean, he's had a home run issue the last, you know, few years.
But he's still one of the best pitchers out there.
Yeah.
You know, Hagen Smith, come on, let's go. And yeah, once again, and if things get a little wonky up at the top, you know, Chase Burns is also another one I've been seeing a lot of being drafted here in mock drafts and stuff like that. Either one of those guys, I still believe wholeheartedly that the Rockies are going to go pitching. In this mock draft, obviously, Bazzana is falling. Thought about him with the Rockies, just full disclosure here, but whenever you're thinking about what they already have in their system, they have Ryan McMahon kind of going from first to second, correct?
For third to second? Has he been third or one? Though they had
because I know he's got second base eligibility in most of these leagues, and I think he's been kind of bouncing around with the corners.
Yeah,
but you got Tovar that's signed long term. You have Amador that's about to come up and play second base. You know, he's moving relatively quickly through the system. So I just don't think it's the best fit. I think that they're going to go for more upside with the arm here. So that's why I'm going to Hagen Smith.
All right. Love to hear it. Moving on here to fourth overall, we have the Athletics, who good luck, you know, good luck trying to predict what the Athletics are going to do really in any draft. Or what direction their organization is going. We have yet to see. They're not as bad this year as I think some would have expected. They've been kind of close to 500 for most of the year. So, really interesting things happening there, I guess. But what direction do you think that they could go in the draft? Do you think that they would take Bazzana there if he fell? Or would they go with one of the other college bats, maybe the prep hitter? What do you kind of see as your best shot in the dark at what the A's might do here?
I mean, it's exactly that. It's a shot in the dark because, I mean, we really don't have any clue as to what they're going to do. I thought for sure that I'd go and take a look and see some sort of pattern of what they're doing. And I went back and, you know, they've drafted college talent in Jacob Wilson in 2023, Daniel Susak in 2022, a catcher. And then they go high school with Max Muncy and Tyler Soderstrom, you know, from 21 and 20. So they could go either way with that. Before that, in 2019, they went Logan Davidson, I believe, who's still stuck in the minor leagues.
You know, I've never heard that name before, not gonna lie.
Yeah, and that was a college, and that was a college bat too. So, like, my thought was at first, like, oh, this might be the spot where, you know, a high school bat would be able to slot in and it would be just fine. But I think thinking about it logically, I'm seeing Oakland's gonna be moving out. The Athletics are moving out. I need to refer to them as the Athletics. They're moving out of Oakland. They're going to do a temporary home, and then they're going to move to Las Vegas, right? I think they want to try to move players through to be able to create a new team within the next two seasons. I don't think going high school is going to be the best way to be able to accomplish that in my prediction of this.
Okay.
So therefore, I'm going to go college once again, Jake, and I'm going to go Jack Caglione. I think, honestly, a two-way player, a left-handed starting pitcher, And a first baseman would be a great option for Oakland long term. I think that they don't have anybody who could really play first base. And I'm sorry, Soderstrom. I don't believe it. I don't believe in it. But if you look here, Caglione is a two-way player at Florida. Last season, he broke the single-season home run record. Okay? Just have Condon do it this year. So he's already done that. We know that he can hit bombs. So that's not a problem. In 55 games played this year, Caglione slashed 415, 525, 844 with 29 home runs, 67 runs scored, 58 RBIs, and 3 stolen bases for good measure. Okay. He is really, really good with the bat. And honestly, I think he could just stay a hitter and be just fine. Though I will say he did make 13 starts for the Gators this year. He struck out 68 over 62 innings pitched. Good for a 9.9 K per nine, a 4.35 ERA. He dealt with a lot of walk issues. If he was to remain a pitcher, I think he could be very interesting as like a back of a bullpen type of situation. I mean, if they could work with him a little bit, the stuff is really good. He throws hard. I think earlier this year, I think I wrote an article about how he touched 97 with the fastball. So, I mean, this is a guy who could be a pitcher if he was, you know, taught a little bit more on how to pitch. If Oakland is able to do a lot what they've been able to do with their bullpen this year with him, that he could be very interesting. I think he's their long-term first baseman, a guy who could hit 30-plus home runs, and who knows how that ball is going to fly in Las Vegas. I know with the AAA affiliate that's there, the Aviators, they tend to rack up some home runs. Give me Jack Caglione at first base in Las Vegas, open top stadium. Let's go all day long. I think that would be great. And I think that he could move relatively quickly. I think, honestly, if he's drafted, he would probably play a little bit after the draft, take the whole season next year and be ready to go by, 2026 opening day?
Mm-hmm.
I think that that could be very reasonable for Oakland and I think, or for the Athletics. And I think that that would be a solid pick there.
Yeah, no, I really love the idea of him being just like a back end reliever and a hitter. You know, because like we haven't really seen the player that's been able to do both, you know, pitching and hitting besides Ohtani, of course. And
Cowboy Ohtani, he's coming.
And what was that?
Cowboy Ohtani.
Who is that?
What is it? What is it? Nolan McLean with the Mets. Cowboy Ohtani.
Not gonna lie, I don't know.
You have no idea.
I don't think no.
Oh, he
I've not heard of Cowboy Ohtani.
Yeah, he's been promoted to Double A Binghamton, hitting bombs and striking everybody out. It's fantastic.
Okay, well, I'm gonna have to do some research. I am so sorry to the listeners for being uneducated and behind the times here. Oh my gosh, that sounds wonderful.
It's magical, is what it is. It was great. Okay. I was hoping he was going to stick in Brooklyn and come down, but
yeah, you can't have everything wrecked down in the Carolinas. There, you have too much good baseball.
I learned this with Skeens, man. They bypass you altogether.
Very true. Okay, so at the major league level, we have not seen the other than Ohtani, and I think you know it's really tough to be a starter and a hitter just because of like the prep that goes into starting. You know, just with the research, with the schedule, just being able to DH that Ohtani and just like working with all of it, the injuries from both, you know, I think if he could close, I think he could play first base in a game where he eventually comes into the bullpen. The relievers have not as like scheduled of appearances as starters do, which is one thing that you have kind of going for you if you're going to do both. But like, there's also just less intensity, like over the course of so many innings, it's like less endurance. You're kind of going out there and throwing your best stuff for an inning or two. You know, like in first base, like if Ohtani's in the outfield, like that's obviously takes a lot more out of you than like playing first base. Like obviously first base is still it's still a defensive position, sees a lot of action over there. But I think it's much more feasible to be able to play first base and DH and maybe come out of the back of the bullpen. I think that there's a bit more flexibility there. And I just I just think it would set a player up for more health long term as well. If you're not throwing, you know, 160 innings in a season and having to like deal with both the prep for the hitting and being a starter where you're having that much of a workload. So I really like the idea of coming out of the back of the bullpen. We'll see, you know, again, it's kind of been, there's one or two of these guys in every draft, you know, we'll see how it goes. Like you said, I mean, if he is just a hitter, he's still going to mash. Like he's still a really, really good hitter, but I love the idea of a closer specifically, or like a back end reliever instead of everyone you shoot too high, you know, going for the starter. You can't be Babe Ruth and Otani, you know, all the time. You can't have too many of those. So I think it is a bit more feasible to do the relief option.
Agreed.
And then, so fifth overall, we have the Chicago White Sox, another team in disarray, in complete rebuild, in tear it down and hope for the best going forward. And we have somebody still on the board in Travis Bezzana, who might be the obvious pick. You still have the high school hitter on the board. Oh my gosh, his name just completely escaped.
Connor Griffin.
Thank you. Connor Griffin still on the board. You got a couple more college hitters on the board. Nick Kurtz, Braden Montgomery. Where do you think the White Sox go fifth overall if Caglione, Smith, Burns, and Condon go before them?
I thought about Bezzana again. And once again, I don't think it's a good fit. I really don't.
He continues to fall.
He continues to fall, man, because, you know, they got Jacob Gonzalez this past year. They have Montgomery coming up through there. Brian Ramos has now made his debut. I just don't see it. Honestly, I thought, and I said this last week, I thought Nick Kurtz would be a great pick for the White Sox here. Sorry, Andrew Vaughn. just not working. It's definitely you, not me. But I decided to go a different way, because whenever you look at the White Sox organization, they do have Luis Robert, they do have Eloy Jimenez, but I think honestly they're going to be moving off of these, you know, pieces here this upcoming year. So it got me thinking, with the exception of Samuel Zavala, they don't have a ton of outfield prospects that are coming through the system, and the outfield looks pretty rough in Chicago right now. Without,
I mean, those... Andrew Benintendi is there.
Yeah. Benintendi.
He's the highest paid player in organization history, man. Come on.
Yes. And that was, couldn't have been a better call. I promise. So I decided to zig here and go Braden Montgomery. And I feel pretty good about this because Braden Montgomery is a beast. Okay. An absolute beast. I think that this would be a great, big upside get here. For the outfield long term, to go with Zavala, Walco, after Robert and Jimenez are traded, because I believe that is going to happen. In 57 games played, Montgomery slash 317, 451, 742 with 26 home runs, 80 RBIs, and 5 stolen bases in his lone season at Texas A&M, with the hardest hit numbers in NCAA. That's over Charlie Condon, all those guys. Okay, this guy was hitting the tar out of the ball. It was insane,
and you just love to hear that.
Yes,
fantastic.
Exactly.
It's exactly what you want.
Yeah, exactly what you want. So Montgomery could move very, very quickly through this system, which I think will fit a quicker timetable of what not only White Sox fans want, but ownership as well, right? You know, I think that they want to try to get back into this as quickly as possible. But man, that AL Central division is going to be very difficult to do. But here's the thing. Two Montgomerys on the field. Oh, man, that'd be fun for TV and radio announcers, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yep. Two Montgomerys. Let's go.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. Like you said, the outfield is pretty barren for the organization, really, as a whole. They don't have a ton coming through there. Jimenez, yeah, good is gone. If they'll even get anything for him, because he keeps getting injured, you know, I don't know what they're going to get for him now. But like, he's not in the next competitive team. I would hate to see Robert go, but like, you know, like he's their biggest guy that they could get a good package for. So yeah, I could see them moving him as well. But like, yeah, I love the idea of Montgomery there. And yeah, I like it. As a White Sox fan, you have the stamp of approval there. And then moving on to the sixth overall pick with the Royals, is this where he finally goes? Is this where Bezanna goes? Do they go with a high school kid as they, I think, have a history of doing a bit more often? What do you think? What do you think happens here with the Royals at number six?
The Royals are kind of a wild card here, but I really do believe that in this mock draft, which I'm sure plenty of you listening are like, this is insane. Bezanna is not going to fall this far. And you're probably right. I'm not quite sure where he fits, but I think that this is the best spot for him. I think the Royals are going to draft Travis Bezanna here because whenever you look at that infield, okay, they have Michael Massey right now at second base, but I think Bezanna is much better than Massey is. You're going to be able to see power. You're going to see average. You're going to get it all there. You're going to have Witt and Bezanna turning to, oh, with Michael Garcia at third, Vinny P at first base. Oh, give it to me all day. That is fantastic. This season, 55 games played at Oregon State. He slashed .418, .581, .939. With 26 home runs, 80 runs scored, 15 stolen bases. So you get some power, you get some speed, you know, at a second base position. And that's the thing. He should not be falling this far because second base is a very hard position to be able to roster with high talent like this, right? But I think the Royals would be great for it. Yeah, it was really a toss-up for me between pitching, more pitching, or, you know, a second base option here. They have gone high school in the past quite a bit, so I'm not ruling that out. But I think Travis Bezanna there in Kansas City would be huge for the Royals, who are really turning a corner right now. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, if Bezanna is still available for the Royals, I mean, they are jumping for joy. They are screaming in the draft room there. But yeah, I think he fits really well with the organization. And, you know, really, really all the other guys that we've had up until this point fit well. You know, you kind of look at it like, well, if he wasn't going to fall this far, where would he go? And I mean, he could go to any team, but like, you also can't really say that like there's a bad pick, you know, ahead of this. And there's just, like we said, there's a ton of college talent at the top. And I mean, we've seen it before, like someone usually falls, you know, someone just doesn't, you know, fit with the organizations that are at the top. You know, last year, I don't think anyone expected Wyatt Langford to go where he went to Texas, you know, in number four. And so there's a ton of chaos that happens on draft day. And yeah, I think the Royals would be thrilled if Bezanna is still there. And I could definitely see it happening. Mm-hmm. And then we move to seventh overall with the Cardinals having the pick here. And now the field is a bit more open. There's still some really great college hitters. There's still that prep guy, Connor Griffin. But I think that this is kind of a little half tier down from the college talent that we've seen with the first six picks here. So where do you see, with pretty wide open, you know, possibilities, where do you see the Cardinals going here with the seventh pick?
So St. Louis primarily goes more college heavy in previous drafts. They did do Jordan Walker, you know, obviously out of high school, but for the most part, they tend to try to lean a little bit more college. For me, I looked at their roster and I saw the perfect choice for them if he's available right here. Paul Goldschmidt is now 36 years old. He is going to be on an expiring contract after next season. And already this year, we've been seeing him, you know, get off to a rough start. We've seen him do this before, and then he comes back super strong. So this could be irrelevant in, like, you know, what, 5 days? I'm kidding. But the Cardinals value defense. This prospect is somebody that I've seen a ton of, and I love the defense that I've seen to this point. And quite frankly, whenever I was kind of watching him or scouting him, as you would say, I saw a lot of Paul Goldschmidt. And I'm talking about Nick Kurtz, our boy Nick Kurtz, who I never doubted Not mm-hmm. once.
Never.
Definitely not on a podcast. Not this one.
Mm-hmm. He just single-handedly willed Wake Forest to the ACC tournament final with his performance against North Carolina, with the game-tying double in with mm-hmm. two outs in the ninth, followed by the go-ahead 400-foot opposite field home run in extra yeah. innings in the semifinal game there. I mean, he carries the team. Like, in a down year that we've seen for Wake Forest, he is still putting the team on his back. He's been ridiculous. After that really slow start where it looked yeah. rough, where it looked like he could fall out of the top 10, mm-hmm. seven looks like a good spot. And like mm-hmm. you said, like yeah. that defense, I like it.
It's a solid spot for him to be able to fall. He is a silent leader. Like, he is not like overly vocal, but you could tell like his whole teammates are behind him. I think he'd be great with the Cardinals organization. The
Cardinal way. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Huge, man. This would be fantastic. 52 games played with Wake Forest. He slashed .313, .538, .789 with 22 home runs, 65 runs scored, 55 RBIs, 4 stolen bases. Like I said, I have seen a ton of him, and I think that he would be a perfect replacement for Paul Goldschmidt whenever he does, you know, have his contract finish up after the end of next season. You draft him this year, let him play a couple levels, and then let him play the entire season in 2025 and be ready to go opening day 26. I am all for it. Nick Kurtz here at 7th overall.
Absolutely. Love that. Love that pick. Moving on to number 8, we have the Angels up with a pick who have they have a very, very clear trend that we have seen in recent drafts. They love picking college players and mm-hmm. pushing them through as fast as physically possible and letting the chips fall where they may, letting the struggles happen at the highest level. So I think it's pretty safe to say we could see a college player going here to the Angels at number 8. But Rick, which one of the college players do you think best fits with the organization right now?
You know, Jake, I'm not going to overthink it too much, to be honest with you. Where Nick Kurtz was number one, you know, in a lot of consensus rankings at the beginning of the season, J.J. Weatherholt was number two right behind him. And, you know, whenever I look at their lineup currently with the Angels, it just fits. You don't have to play around with it much, you know. So like we said, you know, earlier, I think Weatherholt fits to a T going into the 2024 season. Like I said, Kurtz and Weatherholt were both up at the top of the rankings, but an injury ended up keeping him to only 31 games played for West Virginia. With thoughts that he could slide a little bit later, sliding to 8th is really not that bad. He slashed .356, .500, .644 with 8 home runs, 27 runs scored, 30 RBIs, 5 stolen bases. So I want you to just kind of do another imagine here, right? Last year we saw them draft Nolan Schunnell out of Florida Atlantic, I believe is what it was.
Pretty sure, yes.
Yeah, prior to that was Zach Neto from Campbell. And they've done this a lot with a lot of their college players here. But imagine Nolan Schunnell at first, Weatherholt at second, Neto at shortstop, Rengifo at third, and Ohapi at catcher. That is the infield of the Angels, and that is all to finish out the 2024 MLB season.
So Weatherholt? I mean, it's mm-hmm. not. I mean, it's the Angels. So
right. Weatherholt will finish the year.
He'll continue the trend.
He will continue the trend. They will not buck the trend. He will be their second baseman.
All right. All right.
Last game of the season. Put it down.
All right. Put it on the board. I hope it happens. That'd be a ton of fun. All right. So we got the Angels again. Not overthinking it too much. Man, that'd be really funny if they went high schooler. But, you know, we're going with the trends here. We're not gonna rewrite any history books. So going to the 9th overall pick, we have the Pirates, who had the number one selection last year, obviously went with Paul Skenes, but now they find themselves in 9th, and they still have a few really great options here that are still on the board. You have some college hitters, college pitchers, you still have that high school hitter in Connor Griffin. Where do you think that they go, the Pirates, for 9th overall?
So immediately I was like, all right, this is a perfect spot for Connor Griffin. This is going to work. And then I thought about it a little bit further and I was like, the Pirates got Skeens last year. You know, they got Henry Davis. His clock is going, another former first overall draft pick, right? By the Pirates. You know, Nick Gonzalez is up here. He's moving. You got Jared Jones up there. They are trying to compete. They want to go into this now and they want to push. You know, they signed Mitch Keller for a long-term deal. They're ready to go. My first thought was, okay, pitching. But here's the thing. You look at their minor league system. You look at their major league club. Don't even look that far. Look at their major league club. Jack Suwinski got demoted to AAA. You know, you got Reynolds out there on a long-term deal. But besides that, what are you doing? You're just kind of rolling out some outfield. So I'm thinking here, instead of going high school, you know, and giving Connor Griffin what he really wants, and that's to be drafted here, and he deserves to be, but for the Pirates, for their needs that they could go for right now and move quickly, it was a toss-up, to be honest with you, Jake. It was a toss-up between James Tibbs of Florida State, fantastic outfielder, guys. Big power, great hit tool, did fantastic with Florida State, but I didn't go that route. Instead, I decided to go Vance Honeycutt for the University of North Carolina. And my reason for this is Reynolds is considered a power speed type of outfielder here. And I think Honeycutt fits that to a T. I think he will be able to hit for power. He'll be able to hit for average and he'll be able to steal some bases as well. So I think that this is a solid pick and can move relatively quickly throughout their system. In 53 games with the Tar Heels this year, he slashed .319, .419, .699 with 22 home runs, 77 runs scored, 28 stolen bases. Okay. So this is a guy that I think pretty much almost right outside the box, 25 season. I think we could see it. He's got good leadership capabilities, and I think that he'll move really quickly. Now, if they bypass Greensboro, again, with the first pick,
it'll be tough.
I'm going to be sad. That's what I'm going to be. All right.
We need eyes. We need eyes for the sake of the podcast, Pirates. Please send your best players through Greensboro.
Please.
Please. All right. So, yeah, I love the pick for the Pirates. Honeycutt, I mean, you look at, like, his profile, you know, not as, like, maybe high of an average or an OBP as some of these, like, top hitting prospects, and maybe that's what's kind of holding him back a little bit. But, I mean, the power, speed, the athleticism, the outfield defense, like, he has the profile that I could see going even a bit higher. But then leave it just looking at the players above him, it's like, okay, instead of who, you know? Mm-hmm. So very, very talented, very well-rounded. Just another great college player. You know, like you said, like a lot of the teams are not doing the full rebuild. You know, there's a lot of teams that are kind of in the top of this draft that are trying to compete fairly soon. And it's also just become more common for organizations to take advanced college players and just push them through. And just not waste as many at-bats, any bullets, you know, in the minor leagues and just kind of get them up to the majors, you know, with these kind of advanced profiles. So it could definitely be the year that it's heavy, heavy college. And just the amount of talent that's there, the changing philosophies and organizations, I think we're primed for it for sure.
Yeah, and they're incentivized to do so. So
right,
it works. Yeah.
Exactly. And then last pick that we'll go over in the episode today, the 10th overall pick to wrap up part one of our MLB mock draft series. The pick goes to the Nationals. Another team that had one of the top picks last year, they took Dylan Cruz. They have some fantastic outfielders in their organization. They have the cornerstone. Would cornerstone be correct in CJ Abrams, or is cornerstone like first base, third base? Am I just getting the two mixed up? Good player, base player, foundation of the team is CJ Abrams. So they have some really good, talented offensive players. Maybe less on the pitching side. Do you see them kind of going and kind of attacking that pitching side of things for the organization here?
Yeah. So originally, whenever I looked at this, I was like, all right, Connor Griffin, you got yourself a home, man. And then I was like, CJ Abrams can't play short.
Yeah.
Man, that outfield, you know, Cruz, Wood, Hassel. Geez, what else do they have? Dylan Lyle. They got a bunch of other guys in the minor leagues that are just like literally bulldozing their way up. And they just DFA'd Victor Robles.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Victor Robles? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, you know, we're going to see one of them here probably in the next day or so, right? That's usually how that happens. So I was like, okay, well, obviously, sorry, the Griffin family, you're going to have to wait until at least pick 11. So I was like, all right, let's take a look at what their rotation would end up being. So what I ended up looking at is what the Nationals rotation would be in a year from now. And I'm looking here and I'm saying, okay, it's going to be Gore. It's going to be Gray. It's going to be Parker probably because he's really coming on strong right now. And Cade Cavalli's coming back, you know, here soon, right? Currently right now they have Jake Irving, but he's borderline fifth starter right now.
Mm-hmm.
Washington could really go with an advanced college arm that they could be able to move through this system relatively quickly. And Trey Yesavage is a guy that I think could be phenomenal, phenomenal for them. I don't know if we just need to give him a nickname, The Savage.
Yeah, right.
You know, right? Coin that on the podcast.
It's right there for the taking.
So Yesavage had 14 starts for ESU. Jeez. ECU. Mm-hmm. This season in 2024, striking out 139 batters over 86 innings pitched. That's good for a 14.5 K per nine, which is fantastic in and of itself. You know, whenever you're not dealing with Burns and Smith in a draft class and be the third pitcher taken off the board, that's pretty darn good. And he ended up finishing the season with a 2.09 ERA. He's 6'4", 225 pounds, so he's definitely got the starter's build ready to go out the box there. And coming off of a sub-3 ERA the previous season. So, you know, back-to-back seasons of, you know, two ERAs, solid strikeouts here, great pitch mix. I think this is a guy that could be able to move relatively quickly through Washington's system and be able to finish out that rotation. I think that that could be a solid rotation that could, you know, make some moves. And like you said before, this is going to be one of the best outfields in Major League Baseball if these prospects pan out for the Nationals long term.
Yeah, you know, that could definitely jumpstart the competition window potentially. Because like going through the rotation, the options they have, there isn't kind of like that guy, you know, and not guaranteed that Yesavage would be that, but he has probably the best chance to kind of step into that role if he can kind of continue to develop in the org. And I like the pick there. I like the Nationals core. I think they have a really good shot here to add a good piece to it. But yeah, there's the top 10, how we see it going through the entirety of college players, more advanced, you know, like we said, like these teams are, I think, primed to kind of go the more college route, just both for the competition window and the available talent in the draft, as well as changing philosophies. So I'm probably going to see a ton of college hitters. You know, it's definitely possible that Griffin kind of makes it into the top 10 here. One of these teams might want to save some money and go a bit under slot potentially. So we'll see how that pans out. But this is a fantastic group of players to headline the first third of the first round of the draft here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So that does it for this episode of On the Farm. So we will be back next Friday, June 7th, with the second part of our MLB mock draft. So that'll be picks 11 through 20, highlighting some more players a bit. We start to get deeper into the pool, a bit lesser known guys, still definitely some notable ones, guys who will be playing this weekend, but a bit more variety of players as well. So we'll be back and talking about those guys next week. But until then, y'all have a great baseball week.